It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
How's the party in Belgium?
Well, party's probably the wrong term.
It was a pretty solemn
occasion. We were marking the death in one day, the death and the wounding of 2,500 New Zealanders in the first day of the Battle of Passchendaele.
You know, that was a shitter.
It was a really moving ceremony, actually, Mikey. We had about 1,000 New Zealanders there. We had, under the arches of the Menin Gate, we had a Defence Force Kapa Haka group, and it was just an amazing feeling hearing, you know, familiar New Zealand songs, Waiata, being sung in another country, remembering, you know, 12,500 New Zealanders who never came back from the Western Front in 1918. And one of those actually was a great uncle of mine, and I visited his grave for the first time anybody in my family had been there. And I stood over the grave thinking, you know, this guy, his name was William Johnson, you know, went away from home all those years ago, and he's lain here for 99 years. He was killed in 1918, just before the end of the war. you know, so far away from home, and without somebody visiting him that was related to him or might have known him. So it was a moving occasion, but it was really good. We marked that for 2 days. I was actually in Europe, not specifically for that purpose, but because the former mayor of New York, Michael Bloomberg, had very kindly paid my airfare and accommodation costs to go to a conference in Paris. And in the in-between time, I spent time looking at transport for London and some of the big housing projects in London. So really pretty exhausting. You know, you come back. I got back at 5:30 in the morning, and by 7 o'clock that night, when I was sitting at my bloody desk, I was having a telephone conversation like this one and fell asleep during the conversation.
Oh, no.
It's a bit embarrassing when you do that.
I've only done that about 3 times. But I did that to my brother once. It's terrible, calling from London. There's a bit of upsetting carry-on going on while you're away as well. A few budgets came in there. The major review of the council spending came in. You were a bit shocked about that, were you? Or did you know that there was a $405,000 payout going out to somebody?
Oh, that was in the budget. No, I found that out in the annual report, like everybody else, and have asked and did ask Auditor General's office just to examine that to ensure that this was done in accordance with the law, in accordance with proper protocols, and I've, frankly, that sum of money as a severance payment is a huge sum of money. It was 6 times higher than the next highest severance payment. I wouldn't expect to see a repeat of severance payments of that level, notwithstanding that the person was obviously a senior person to have got that sort of payment. But we've just got to be so careful about how we spend our ratepayers' money, and I'm not prepared to see money splashed around. I want to see that money treated by council leaders in the professional side of the staff as if it were their own money. I just think it's a bad look for council when that sort of thing happens.
You had the Value for Money Review 2017, which broke down the council's operations within communications and public engagement, which is SPIN, basically, isn't it? So the Auckland Council's budget for SPIN is $45 million. Why do you have to have it? Why do the people aren't there people within the council that can do that for cheaper? And that's $45 million, brother.
Yeah, it's about a wide range of things. It's not simply, you know, actually the worst thing the unit does is political spin. It doesn't do that at all.
What does it do then? What does that unit do?
It's about consultation and communication. Every time, you know, when we put out a 10-year budget, for example, which we're about to do, we are obliged under law to go out and consult widely with the public across Auckland. Every time we have some change in planning rules, we have to advertise it in the Herald, even though probably 10 people read it. That's required. That's an obligation on us by law. It's about marketing events. But I set up the Value for Money reviews, and I set it up quite deliberately because I wanted to make sure that for every dollar we were spending, we were getting the best possible value from it. And the first four reviews have now been received. I'm announcing them in about an hour's time. And one of the areas where there will be a significant cutback in funding will be the communications and engagement. The recommendations, the review was by professional staff, overseen by an independent reference panel and using expert outside people that are expert in the field that they're looking at. And their recommendation in communications and engagement is that we cut spending by 5% for each of the next 3 years, which will pull a total of over the 10-year period, we'll save another $32 million by cutting expenditure in that area. And that's what I expect from these reviews. That one of the other reviews said, look, this organisation, it was about external relations. It says it works to best practice internationally. It's got a lean budget. It does a good job. We recommend one or two things, but basically it's doing what you expect it to do. So yeah. some will get an A grade and some will get a D grade.
I've my experience with consultants over the last, say, 10 years is that every single one of them are overpaid and don't do a lot.
Well, that's right. That's why we've tried, where possible, to bring things in-house. Sometimes, however, you need a specialist expertise that if you had it in-house, you'd only be using it 10% of their working week, and obviously that doesn't make sense. So you got to find a balance there. But
where are you going to cut money then?
The biggest
because
savings.
You sort of got in under the promise that you'd be trimming the fat.
And that's exactly what I'm doing. These reviews are the most comprehensive and most in-depth undertaken by any council across anywhere in New Zealand. So make no apology for the reviews that we've put in place. They recommend the first four, and we'll be doing every area of council and its CCOs. The first four indicate that recommendations that could see savings of $373 million, I think it is, over 10 years. That's a significant sum of money. But the biggest savings are in areas like getting different parts of council to work together. So one of the reviews was on water, and it said, well, council runs a stormwater function, which is different from water cares, wastewater and freshwater. But if you do procurement together, for example, and it says this about communications as well, if you do procurement together, you get much better prices. So take communications. If you've got an advertising budget and you're marketing all of the council-controlled organisations and the council itself as one, then you're going to get a far better deal from the advertisers that you use. In regard to water care, if you're procuring, we're spending billions of dollars, literally billions of dollars in infrastructure. If you do it jointly, then you're going to get a better deal from the providers of the contractors than if you do it individually. That's where the big savings are being made.
Some people might be thinking, if you're marketing, what are you marketing? You're just marketing something the council are doing to people who are paying for it, as in the rate base.
If there are events, there are events put on over the summer around the region. If you don't tell people that you're putting on an event, nobody will turn up.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. But what about someone like Watercare doesn't need to be marketed?
But it's the savings in water care is not around marketing, it's around infrastructure investment. It's about, we're going to be spending $7 billion in the next 10 years on water, fresh water, wastewater and stormwater infrastructure, so we can cope with the growth in population, so we can stop the outflow of wastewater into our harbours every time it rains. These are things that should have been done a century ago. They weren't. I'm not prepared to leave that for another generation to solve. We're going to start tackling that problem, but it costs money.
So the wages across the board in the Auckland City Council have blown right out. You say you're going to put a cap on that. Is there anyone who was thinking that they're going to go to Auckland City Council and get a job and they're going to get paid heaps of money now? Should they just give up on that dream?
Well, one of the problems you've got, for example, I was on the selection panel for the new chief executive of Auckland Transport, and we were interviewing people from the United States, from Australia, from the United Kingdom, and We want to get the best person to head up Auckland Transport, which I think we have done. But that means that we have to compete internationally for a person of that expertise, of that ability to do the job.
But how far down the line does that go? So obviously someone who's going to take a job like that is going to be wanting a good whack. But I mean,
yeah.
it seems like there were wages going all. Everyone was getting a bit of a pump up of their pay packet sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, the guy that we ended up appointing is getting a good whack, but it's $100,000 less than what his predecessor was getting. So
less of a good whack, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he's still it was sufficiently. He's an expatriate, good. New Zealand, had been working in Australia. He's a very capable guy. We got to pay the top people good money. But I've said to the chief executive, I expect constraint. I don't set the wages. Contrary to public opinion,
you're the man that keeps got to keep on
top.
Yeah,
I'm the one that's held accountable for it, and that's my responsibility. And I've said that I don't expect the sort of lift in salaries in the executive leadership team that I saw in the last budget. Now, that is a process that I've got to work through with the chief executive officer, because I want our organisation to be seen as one that gets value for money and gets the best people into jobs, but is also really careful about how it spends the public money. And I've done that all my life in public service, and I'm not going to stop doing it now. That's what I'm going to be pushing for.
A 2017 Voice of Aucklanders survey, the Voice of Aucklanders survey, found 17% of Aucklanders surveyed trusted council and were satisfied with the council's performance. Were you bummed out about that number?
Well, yeah, it's better than last year, but not by much.
What was last year?
it was 15% last year, so at least the trend line is in the right direction. But am I satisfied with the number? No. Probably the best practice figure you'd see around the world would be a 50%, not a 17%. But it takes time to turn impressions and perceptions around. We are working hard to do what we think is good for the city, to find the economies, to build the infrastructure, to find ways of raising money. All of those things have to be done. And the public are pretty harsh critics of how local government works. I think they're harsher critics of local government than they are of central government, maybe because it's closer to them. But we've got to improve that figure, and no doubt about it. So the thing that I was quite pleased about was, and it wasn't published, that one part of that figure was business confidence in the council, and that had gone up markedly. Just trying to remember what it was, but it was...
It wasn't just petrol companies, was it?
No.
with the petrol tax and all
that. The good thing, let's talk about the petrol tax for a moment. Yes. Fuel tax, actually, because it'll cover diesel. We've got to spend $27 billion in the next 10 years on transport, $27 billion. And I said before the election, I did meeting after meeting during the campaign, and some of the people that were running against me said, oh, well, we're not going to increase anything, I said, well, are you just going to watch the city get more and more gridlocked? Oh, no. Well, how are you going to do it? Well, nobody had an answer. And I said, look, I'm going to go out, and I'm going to try and get every last dollar I can out of central government. They take 95% of our tax as a country. Therefore, they've got to be a big player in the game. But don't be naive and think that Aucklanders won't need to make that some contribution themselves. People in Invercargill and people in Gisborne and Whanganui aren't going to pay for infrastructure that Aucklanders are using. So we've got to put some skin in the game. And so,
yeah, fair enough.
I looked at the options. I could put,
I agree with you there, Phil, because I think that I was looking at the other day, we had the trains went down for there was a fire in Penrose. We were back for that. And the trains were shut down, and then it was the day after they'd announced the petrol tax, and everyone's sitting there in gridlock complaining, I'm going to be late for work. And it's like, because you're going to be late for work, and it's because there's too much traffic, and that's what the petrol tax is for. It was all pretty clear. It wasn't really a day for complaining about that.
No. Well, look, if you raise the same money that 10 cents a litre will raise out of rates, I'd have to put rates up by 10 to 12%.
Don't do that.
Nobody wants me to do that.
Or
I could follow what London does. London has a congestion tax. You know how much that is a day? $21 a day. Or, you know, the last government wanted me to sell assets. I don't want to sell, you know, the airport or Watercare to pay for new transport, and the public doesn't want me to do that. So, believe me, I've gone through all of the options we've got, and this is the one that in the immediate future is best in terms of enabling me to pay for the infrastructure that Auckland needs.
Right.
If we don't start investing in that now, you know, when you we want to put in a new city rail link, we decided that, what, 3 or 4 years ago. We'll get it in 2023, which is another 6 years out. So there's always a lag, but until you make the decision that you're going to invest in the infrastructure and start the tendering and the design and the construction work, this city will become gridlocked, and it won't be a good place to live. So we have to tackle this problem, and we as Aucklanders have got to pay something towards it. And actually, with a 10 cents a litre fuel tax, the average that people will pay is $2.60 a week. So it's $2.60 a week to try to do something about, you know, you probably waste more than that money in petrol stuck in the longest parking place in the country, which is the Southern Motorway.
The someone's sent a rather aggressive text to you here, which I won't read out, to saying Phil on his petrol tax. Already spent heaps on petrol. But you don't carpool, buddy.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, everybody wants something for nothing, but that's not the world we live in. And you know, we've got to spend our money wisely. We've got to make the right decisions. But if we don't invest, 800 extra cars a week that are coming on our roads each and every week is just going to lock the city up in total gridlock, and we can't afford for that to happen.
Two more quick questions, Phil. Someone said, ask him why they have three agencies promoting Auckland.
Three agencies. Well, it depends what I'm not sure what they're referring to.
I think they probably mean advertising agencies, or
no. I mean, are they talking about Auckland Trans, Auckland tourism, events, and economic development? That's an agency that's designed to promote Auckland. It's specific. It's set up under the legislation that was passed in 2010 to, you know, promote us as a tourist destination rather than just as a through place. I mean, you know, there are reasons why we're doing that. We've cut their budget back too, so there are a lot of people not happy with me cutting their budgets back, but that's part of my responsibility to make sure that this city operates effectively and efficiently.
And still with cutting, you're the man that wants to plant a million trees.
Yep.
But what about a third of our big trees being cut down? What's the deal with that? That seems like a brutal amount.
Yeah, well, that was a change. We've got a new government now, but the last government changed the Resource Management Act and made it very easy to chop down trees that are probably of great significance. I hope that they're, you know, I don't want to go back to where you have to have a permit to trim a branch off a totara tree that's poking through your window.
No, but it does seem ridiculous.
I do want to have proper protection for trees that are deserving of protection, and I'm hoping that the new government will bring something in on that. But in the meantime...
Pass it on from us, would you?
Yeah. In the meantime, this year we will have planted about 170,000 trees towards our million trees, which is pretty good since takes time to... step things up, and the great thing about that, you know, 800,000 of the trees I'll be planting are provided by the New Zealand Prison Service, so it's inmates giving something back to their community, you know, planting the seeds, growing the seedlings, and sometimes, you know, community programs to plant them. We're getting great cooperation right across the board, and you know, we'll get to our million trees. Most of them will be natives, and that will start to transform the city into a green and more beautiful place that absorbs carbon emissions instead of creating them.
All we have to do is get rid of that disgusting Roundup. You spray it everywhere and it'll be sweet.
Well, you talk to the farmers about that. If you've ever grubbed gorse like I have, you might have a little bit more sympathy for using a spray.
Well, yeah, but it's not so much the spray; it's the glycosam,
glyphosate. Well, the problem with that is that we get our environmental agency saying no, it's not a problem. We get somebody else saying yes, it is. What we do is we try to err on the side of caution and cut down the use of chemical sprays. But mechanical sprays are more costly and less effective. So you've got to try and find a balance between those things. It's a little bit like 1080.
Yeah.
You know, people have said to me, oh, why do you put this 1080 in the bush? Because actually the opossums and the rats are killing our bird life off so that it'll be non-existent. And the other forms of trapping just come nowhere near the 99% wipeout rate that we get from 1080. So, you know, everything's a compromise and a trade-off.
I was just chucking it in there, Phil, you know, just to see.
You've got to, you know, I'm wary about using chemicals in the environment, but sometimes that's the best option that we've got at the present time while we seek to find a better one.
All right, thank you very much, Phil Goff.
Okay, Mike.
See you this time next week.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers, mate.
Take care. Cheers.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.